Hello and welcome to the Gambling Files podcast, a podcast that looks slightly different today, although if you're a long-time listener, not that different, because the difference is that Fenton isn't here. So we miss you, Fenton. What am I saying? He's not listening. But I am here. I'm John Bruford. I'm one of your hosts, your only host today. I'm genuinely a little bit excited about this episode. I don't know how it's going to go, partly because Fenton's not here to keep me in line. But also because I've been asking this guest to come on the podcast almost since the podcast started. So let's hope he's not shit. But I do need to say, before I introduce our wondrous guest, I do need to say that we have to be very grateful to our benevolent corporate overlords, who include, in no particular order, World Gaming. Brad, have you ever been to ICE?
I have indeed, but the last show I attended was pre-pandemic in London.
I think that was the last time I saw you, actually, in the flesh.
You're right, buddy.
Yep. I think I bumped into you in the Hippodrome one night.
That's correct.
And yes, it was a very pleasant
evening. We had a good time, man.
We did, yes.
It was awesome. Yeah.
But yeah, so that was that would have been
that was February 2020.
2020, yeah. It was right as it all kicked off. And I remember really distinctly that show because there was the rumors were flying around, and you know the virus was seen in Singapore, and like as soon as something's seen in Singapore, you know it's already everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much that simple. It's like if it had started in the US and had been found in Chicago or Atlanta, it's already gone everywhere.
Of course.
I remember somebody saying that there had been a Chinese business exhibiting at ICE that year, and that they had decided, instead of going straight back home where it was all kicking off, they hired a car and went on a tour around Scotland.
As you do. Yeah,
sounds preferable to being locked down. But anyway, I digress. So ICE is put on by the people at World Gaming, formerly known as Clarion Gaming. And I think they do a great job. I'm not just saying that because they're one of our corporate overlords. But do you know what else?
Do tell.
This is a little known fact, unless you listened to the last episode. But today's episode is brought to you by Gaming Laboratories International. Are you familiar with their work?
GLI, I certainly am.
GLI indeed. The dogs are going mad downstairs. Annette's just come back. Hold on one second. They're just very happy. GLI. It's a world-class testing, inspections, and certification company committed to delivering the highest quality land-based lottery and iGaming testing and assessment services around the world. Do you know what else, Brad?
Do tell.
GLI provides suppliers, operators, and regulators with expert guidance for navigating the future of gaming and ensuring gaming innovations meet regulatory standards with confidence in more than 710 jurisdictions.
That's impressive. Great company. James Maeda, you know, built it. Of course, they've been sold, as I understand. I know several individuals who work for GLI.
They have some terrific people.
Martin Britton.
Oh, Martin's hilarious, isn't he?
I'm thinking of some of the people over on your side of the world. But, of course, between GLI and their competitor, not to be mentioned on your program, very, very important in the gaming space and to make sure that things are aligned and that we're following all the regulations and that when you put a machine, in this case, a slot machine, for example, into a casino, that the RNG and everything is correct. And there you go. I will send you my invoice at the end of this podcast.
Much appreciated. For more information, you can visit gaminglabs.com.
There you go. Right on. Good one, man.
Also, though, I don't know, this is probably going to sound excessive to you, possibly, but we have a third sponsor on this podcast. And this is their third year of sponsoring us as well. So they're obviously not listening. We're also sponsored by Optimove. Mm-hmm. Now, Optimove's positionless marketing is changing how iGaming teams operate. And me and Fintan, we've had their demo, right? And it's absolutely mind-blowing. It's like, I'm not exaggerating even slightly. We both, after the demo, we're both just like, holy cow, that's unreal. The granularity, the what it allows you to do with data is just, it's bonkers. But anyway, you can discover how operators using Optimove's positionless marketing platform to launch personalized CRM campaigns, dynamically change casino lobbies and bet slips, and create engaging gamified experiences. And you can learn more at optimove.com. But go see them, get the demo, and if you tell them that you came via us, it's good for us, and it helps us to stay supported, because doing all of this, I know we make it look easy. I know we make it look as though it requires no effort whatsoever. Well, I can't tell you the truth. No, but seriously, it does allow us to do what we do, which is
a lot of moving parts, as they say.
There's at least one. It's usually just my mouth. So this episode, I'm delighted to introduce, finally, Brad Broderick. And now I'm going to have to look at my notes for your full title. Director, Casino Business Development, Norwegian Cruise Line Holdings.
Correct.
Now, Brad, it's long been suggested that you're one of the best-dressed people in the casino industry.
Well, okay, go on. Yeah.
don't stop.
I remember you writing that a couple of years ago, and it was very kind, number one. Today I'm just slumming it, if you will, in a jumper and collared shirt, because our weather here in beautiful British Columbia, Canada, where I reside, went from 20 degrees Celsius yesterday to snow, which isn't untypical. So it's a jumper kind of day, if you will. But thank you, John. It's very kind.
It's okay. I'm one of those people, like, if you see somebody and they're rocking a really nice suit, they've got a great pair of shoes on, something like that, you got to tell them. I mean, there's not enough compliments men to men. Do you know what I mean?
So I'm going to tell you that I got a lot of my influence. I'm going to go back a little bit. I started in 1998 with John Huxley Casino Equipment, with Jeff Lindsay and company. And here I was, a young man living in Canada, had the opportunity to set up the Canadian company for Jeff. And I remember going to the first, you know, ice show at Earl's Court, and it was a different time, as you know, John. And everyone was suited and booted. And even Jeff's son, Daniel, who subsequently has become a very good friend over the years, I got a lot of my influence from my time working for John Huxley Casino Equipment, and subsequently TCS John Huxley, and all of my travels to the UK. You know, I would always buy my dress shirts and my shoes and things that I couldn't get in Canada, or even when I relocated to Las Vegas and worked for the company. And so I'm very proud to say that. I really am. I, you know, by no means was I buying bespoke. You know, that's very expensive. I could only walk down German Street and dream about such things, or Savile Row, for that matter, I beg your pardon. But yeah, I got a lot of that influence from the UK, and I've taken that with me over the years. So thank you very much for the compliment. I really, that's very kind.
I'm saying it because it's absolutely true. You're always beautifully turned out, but it's not just like wearing a suit that's nice. It's knowing how to wear things with a suit, etc. There is more to things than just buying something that's nice, you know.
Sure.
And other honorable mentions in that category, I think Herman Paminger at the European Casino Association. He's always nicely turned out. There are others.
He was on your list as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah. Always stays in my head, that. And another gentleman with a fine head of hair. But you don't see many earrings in the industry, and I have an earful.
Oh, you still look like a pirate.
Yeah, that's what I've been going for.
I like that
it's the
look.
The Pantani effect. The period that you're talking about and TCS expanding and all of that, I mean, it is a really interesting period. Oddly enough, I've only met Jeff once, I think.
Come on.
But we did when we founded the British Casino Awards, which became the European Casino Awards. I made Chips, the charity that it was all working
charity,
for.
Yeah,
because that's a charity that's close to my own heart. My daughter uses a wheelchair, and I I've seen firsthand the impact that a wheelchair has on a kid's life, and it is. There aren't any words, you know what I mean? It's unreal. And the work that those guys do, because we love, in the UK, we love to talk about how brilliant the National Health Service is, and it is fantastic.
Hmm.
But it's an institution that's based largely on statistical probability, as any general coverall health service would have to be. And so when you have kids that have very specific, either very specific disabilities or disabilities which have so many variations, like cerebral palsy,
where
every single person with it is entirely different. A charity out there that provides actual bespoke powered chairs for kids, that's something else. Because as wonderful as the NHS is, this is one of the areas where they could really use some help. And Chips has just been doing amazing things.
That's awesome. I'm sure Lindsay would, if she doesn't already know that, Linda would be thrilled to hear that. And as I said, I consider them very dear friends. And every year, even after the acquisition of TCS purchasing John Huxley Casino Equipment Limited, I would always, every year at ICE, on the Friday, Jeff, Linda, and I always have a lunch somewhere up in the West End. And going back to the NHS, you know, it's no different in Canada. And that we, you know, when it works, socialized healthcare, if you want to call it that, it works really, really well. But I have now, after spending 12 years in the United States and relocating back to Canada as a very proud Canadian, I do see the difference, you know. And certainly in the United States, it's a case of the haves and have-nots. If you have insurance, it is like lightning. It just happens. And it's extraordinary. And it's amazing. In Canada, and again, I'm not bashing my country. I love my country, but it can be very tough, and it's a long wait. So I'm glad that you, John, recognize the benefit of Chips, you know, with a daughter who is in a wheelchair, and it is a great charity, without a doubt. And it has a long legacy, for sure.
It does. It does. And it's lovely to see people just doing something good because they can. Speaking of people who just do good things because they can, I can't have a conversation with a Canadian without touching on the great Terry Fox.
Of course.
Possibly my all-time hero. It's either him or Bill Hicks. They're kind of pretty much tied up there. I've talked to my kids about Terry Fox, and I am hopefully sorting out some Terry Fox races in Britain. to sort of add to that. And I, you know, I talk to the organization sporadically. We try and move things along a little bit. But it's always really difficult to try and explain to people just how profound Terry Fox's impact was on the whole of Canada.
Mm.
And the thing that has always, that always, always just absolutely makes me fill up is that he was a really young man and he had this enormous vision. And everything I've read about him, you know, there's a journalist, I can't remember the lady's name, but she wrote a biography and she doesn't sugarcoat it. She's like, you know, he was difficult. He had bad moods. He got really pissy with people when they wouldn't just do his bidding kind of thing. And there's that brilliant book Douglas Coupland wrote as well, which is fabulous. But, you know, very human, very flawed, very young, but that massive vision. And partly that could only, you know, the idea that, yeah, you know what, if we all chip in, we'll cure cancer in no time at all. The almost naivety to think that, but the energy to just push through with it as well, and to do it, and to do that for anybody that's listening that's not familiar, Terry had a leg amputated above the knee.
Mm-hmm.
Would have been about 1979, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then decided he was going to run across Canada, and this is long before prosthetics were what they are now. He didn't make it, unfortunately. I think he made it 3,666 kilometers.
Yeah, and then unfortunately, he passed.
And then they discovered that he'd in fact been running over a marathon a day with two massive tumors in his lungs.
Yeah.
And his cancer was metastatic, and unfortunately that took him. But what a legacy, and what a, it's that vision, man. What a gift that vision is to kids. Do you know the Douglas Coupland book I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think I do. And, you know, of course, me growing up, the Marathon of Hope is something that, you know, I'm of that vintage that I remember the Marathon of Hope. And then again, subsequently going on in school, in public school, we had the Terry Fox Run, where you would raise money, canvas, talk to every uncle, aunt, cousin, you know, mother, father, brother, sister, anyone you could, to scrape together some cash to put towards the charity. And Terry's an icon for Canadians and clearly abroad. So that's cool. And I remember you telling me about Terry Fox when you knew I was a Canadian.
Yeah, whenever I meet a Canadian, I'm like,
Terry Fox.
Oh, hell.
Then you got a commonality right away.
Yeah. Also, I don't wear it anymore because I don't run anymore. But when I used to run, I used to wear a loonie around my neck.
No way.
My friend Mick, I used to call him Mick the Coin. Mick had this weird little business. He'd go on markets, right, and he'd get coins, beautiful coins with beautiful designs, and he would drill a hole in the coin with it in a vise, and he would cut around the design to create a pendant.
That's cool.
And I got the Terry Fox Canadian dollar, and he did a Terry Fox one for me. Just a little reminder, you know, you're running, you're feeling really bad, you're thinking, Jesus Christ, why didn't I stay in bed? Just a reminder that, you know what, it can always be a lot worse.
It can always be worse. True words. Thank your higher power every day, whatever your belief is. Whatever your belief is.
Well, we should probably talk about casinos and stuff.
Why not?
Does seem a little work-related, but let's roll with that.
Sure.
Now, Norwegian Cruise Line Holdings. It's not a small business. How many ships is the business? Do you know?
So we are the fourth largest cruise line in the world. We were founded in 1966, and we currently have under the Norwegian Cruise Line brand, who I'm employed with, we have 21 ships and growing. And overall, with the three brands under Norwegian Cruise Line Holdings, we have 32 ships. So we have three distinct brands. We have Norwegian Cruise Line, we have Oceania Cruises, and we have Regent Seven Seas Cruises. So Norwegian would be more for the masses, if you would. Oceania is what we would refer to, or in the domain, public domain, our country club brand, very well known for its food, wins accolades every year for food. In, you know, like, let's say you're in Bangkok for the day, the chef would take you as part of an excursion to a floating market, and you would buy some of that evening's meal that, you know, the fish that he selected, or she for that matter, I beg your pardon. And then Regent, our other brand, is essentially a six-star cruise line where it is one crew member for every two passengers. So you have a dedicated butler. You have a concierge that will help you with dinner reservations, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, it's on a completely different level, smaller ships, Oceania and Regent. But I work, John, with Norwegian Cruise Line, and that, you know, I am employed by Norwegian Cruise Line Holdings, but I work with Norwegian Cruise Line.
So I'm more your customer, whereas if Fintan were here, he would be the six-star kind
perhaps,
of.
Perhaps, yeah. You know.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Who knew that you could even get six stars? I didn't.
There you go.
What a time to be alive.
And again, I say six stars. That's my, if I was at a casino event and someone said to me, hey, Brad, can you tell me about Regent? I would say we are a six-star cruise line. Yeah.
Okay. So your part, 21 ships.
Yeah, so as director of casino business development, what I do is our team, we work with currently circa just over 300 land-based casinos around the world. So brick and mortar operators. And some of those are the largest names in gaming, Caesars Entertainment, Penn Entertainment, Foxwoods, the list goes on and on and on. Hit casinos in Europe. And the casino operator, they reward their player and a guest a complimentary cruise with Norwegian Cruise Line based on a criteria that we have. And it's essentially based on the player's ADT, average daily theoretical, which every casino lives, eats, and dies by. And based on your theoretical in that land-based casino, you receive the complimentary cruise, starting with an inside stateroom to an ocean view to a balcony, a club balcony, right up to a haven suite, again, with your own butler and a dedicated concierge. And so what I do, new acquisitions. So I bring in new casino operators that are not part of our program. So I could say to you, John, as the VP of marketing at Casino ABC, you could give your best players a set of pots and pans, or you could give them and a guest a complimentary cruise from Norwegian Cruise Line that they have a certain period of time to reserve their cruise. And they have 1 year to actually take the voyage. So if you're the VP of marketing, you're going to say, well, Brad, why would I give you my players? And it's very simple. John, do they go on a vacation? Yeah. Why would you, as Casino ABC, not want to have a stake in their holiday vacation? The reward is coming from you, from Casino ABC. I, Norwegian, we're merely the conduit. Right? So the reward, the certificate is coming from you. We are saying, we're taking, if you want to call it the risk, if you're giving me a list of 1,000 players that qualify, and I'm going to give you 1,000 certificates that you can put in their hands, I hope that when they come on board, because we are the only casino in town, they're going to play to their theoretical level. But there's no obligation to play either. You know, that's the reality. People go on a jolly. That's okay. Because it's still heads on beds. And there's still other onboard revenue. Although the cruise is complimentary, the cruise fare, and they may not spend money in our casino whilst on board, they may go on excursions. They're going to take a specialty dining package. They're going to buy the beverage package. They might buy some art from our art gallery or art auction. They may go to our boutiques and buy themselves a nice timepiece or jewelry or whatever it may be. I can't hear you.
My bad. Sorry, my chair was creaking. Did you say boutiques?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Oh, no. We have boutiques. We have like Bulgari, Panerai, Breitling, John Hardy. There's names that come to my mind. You know, I'm not involved in onboard revenue in that regard, sure. But yeah. So that's what I do. That's what I do with the company. And my job is primarily, or my role is to bring in new acquisitions, new partners that we can do this with and maintain our current partnerships and go out and along with my esteemed colleagues, go out and do these certificate events all over Canada, the United States, Caribbean, and Latin America. Those are the areas that I'm responsible for in my role.
That must be really tough.
Like I say, I thank my higher power every day, you know. I'm on planes a lot, John, and it, you know what? It's all good.
Yeah, you know what? Like doing what I do and, you know, I get paid to write stuff and I get paid to do this and that and we have sponsored podcasts and stuff and I very frequently think my parents worked in a factory when they had work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is way better than that.
Cool. Right on.
You got to count those blessings. Not that there's anything wrong with working in a factory. It's just, you know.
Yeah, it definitely. Definitely. And as I said, I'm very grateful. And I can't believe that next month will be 7 years already. And when Norwegian came knocking on my door, so to speak, and created the director's role for me, allowed me to work remotely. I guess if there's any, and I know you have a massive plethora of guests that watch this podcast, but at the end of the day, and it's very cliche, your network is your net worth. There's no question about that. Because whilst our program that we do was highly successful for a long time in the United States, we were doing very little in Canada, like very little. We were doing nothing in the Caribbean, doing nothing in Latin America, and we had no one based in Europe. And I'm very fortunate. I had those relationships coming from the years at TCS John Huxley, 18 years, going on to the online gaming space to learn about that, and then spent 2 years with McCurr, setting up their U.S. business. So, whilst John might not be the guy that I dealt with as the vice president of table games, I still had the relationship with John at Casino ABC, and I could give John a call and say, John, I'm now with Norwegian. Can you please introduce me to your VP of marketing or director of player development? And all you can do is make the intro and the rest is up to me, right? So again, though, it's those networks, and it's important to not burn bridges.
Yeah, or just not piss people off in the first place. And well, at some point in my life, I will remember that.
Yeah, there you go. That's okay. No one takes you that serious anyway, pal.
Oh, that's a good call. If Fintan were here, he would have laughed his head off at that. But
right,
sadly, he's away being a busy casino executive. I do want to talk to you a little bit. I know you're not strictly in casino operations on cruise ships, but I also know that you're a smart man and that you understand your bread and butter. You understand that side of the business. So sort of, I wanted to just ask you a couple of questions because I'm not sort of au fait with cruises. And I was wondering about how some things work, right? So one of the things I was wondering about is, so somebody's on a cruise ship and generally, you know, international waters isn't usually that far offshore. How does currency work? Like, obviously a casino has its own currency in chips and plaques, etc. But what currency is the, you know, if I walk in, do I need to have dollars when I walk in?
Sure.
Is there ship currency that I've already bought?
So regardless of where we're sailing in the world, wherever that cruise is, our currency that we use is the United States dollars. And if you, any service on board the ship, including casino, you can use your room key card, which would go right to your folio. Because when you do your check-in online and then eventually at the terminal before embarkation, you provide a credit card. So if I want to go into the casino and put $100 on a machine and I don't want to put in currency, legal tender, cash, which you have the option of doing, or even on a gaming table with chips, I can use my player's card and it's all just touched and boom. And then when I go to my stateroom and I look at my TV and I look at my folio, I can see how many drinks I bought John in the lounge and how much money I spent on a slot machine or put into a machine. And it's not unusual for Norwegian casinos at sea to have players. Listen, we're a cruise line first, right? First and foremost. Casino makes up a very, very small part of what we do, but an important part. But it's not unusual for us to have players put up credit lines or have a credit line, lines of credit, front money in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. They know I'm coming on board and I'm going to play. And I want to make sure that I don't have to keep drawing it from my credit card or going to an ATM or whatever it may be. I have the money behind the cage ready to rock and roll. That's not okay. Unusual. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not the norm by any means, but it's not unusual.
But it's possible. Absolutely. And that's the thing. That it's possible suggests that enough people with enough wealth mean that it's necessary.
Of course. Just like a land-based casino, we work with independent reps, junket operators as well, that bring on single or groups, just like a land-based casino. I can tell you that Norwegian, we have the highest gaming limits at sea. We compare to the limits offered in a land-based casino. Not a premium land-based casino. When I say premium, like we wouldn't be competing with Wynn in Las Vegas or Macau for that matter, but we have very liberal gaming limits on our table games. On average, we have between 20 and 25 tables and between 200 and 300 slot machines.
Okay, that's not a small setup then. It's not a broom cupboard afterthought.
No. And we use, RFID chips from Abiati. We have a, you know, a great partnership with them in the sense as a vendor. So we track every, I'm talking about table games specifically, and we work with Konami on their system for tracking as well.
Synchros.
Yeah, with Synchros, yeah. Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
So we know right down to the cent.
No, that's, I mean, that's, without being rude, that's more forward thinking than many land-based casinos are. You know, a lot of casinos have, if it ain't broke, don't fix it sort of rules.
Of course, of course. I can honestly tell you, and I know I'm wearing my company hat, but our onboard casinos put a lot of land-based casinos to shame. And our team that go and attend the trade shows at G2E and ICE and the like, they're investing heavily every year on making sure we have the right slot product and that every, you know, right down to the seating. You know, we aren't afraid to spend money on making sure that our casino product is up to spec for our guests.
I guess, and I'm sort of thinking out loud here because if I ask this as a question, even Fintan would say, God, that's a stupid question. But the fact that the ships sort of have a demographic sort of means that the casino shares that demographic, if you see what I mean. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's kind of, it's essentially the same thing as a resort casino. It's just that you happen to be floating.
Correct.
But here's what I'm wondering. Here's one of the things I'm wondering. Where is a cruise ship casino? Where are you licensed and how does that work?
We're not.
So you're not licensed. So no, you're only functioning internationally?
Yeah, we sail in international water. The casino is not permitted to open until we are in international water. And therefore, we do not, we don't have to follow, we don't have to follow the same regulations as a land-based casino. Hence why we also don't have currently online gaming. What I can tell you, I just found this out very, very recently. So because of jurisdictional, not issues, but regulations, we don't have iGaming. But what we are working on and going to launch, I believe, in short order, is mobile gaming. So that means playing at that time whilst on that ship. Yeah,
so people will be able to.
That's the other reason why we also don't offer sports betting. Because, John, if you're from Alabama and you do a cruise with us and you bet on a future sporting event, and gaming, betting, sports betting is illegal. And again, I'm throwing Alabama out there, ad-libbing. How do I, as Norwegian Cruise Line, how do I pay you? We would not be following the law if we issued you a check and mailed it to you in Alabama. So sports betting, if you have it on board, you have to bet on that current event. And it's probably not, again, I don't know the company's line on that. I can only tell you my opinion and what I hear, but that's why we don't do sports betting as well.
Would you have on a ship like a sports bar type of a setup or not?
Oh, yes, we have sports bars where you and your mates can come in and watch a football match or whatever is going on.
So you could, in theory, have some form of in-play.
You could. Yeah, you could.
Something that is just whistle to whistle.
Sure.
Because that could be really interesting.
But some of the things that you run into, and it's not as much of a concern now as it was, because we have now launched Starlink on board all of our ships, but bandwidth was always an issue. Let's say you're up in Alaska going into Glacier Bay. Satellite signals are terrible. If I got $1,000 on the line on an event and all of a sudden it goes down, you know, all you have is a bunch of disgruntled punters.
Yeah.
You know, if you will. Yeah.
No, it's very fair.
Especially if they've lost the event.
There's also the potential when you look at the sort of at the software and sort of delivery aspect of on ship gaming, the potential for your marketing team to gamify promotions mm-hmm. is also massive. And use, you know, you could potentially use the same sort of mechanisms to do that.
Sure. But we already have a loyalty program like a land-based casino, a tiered benefit program. So once John starts to play in our onboard casino, you now start to get marketing promotions from Norwegian directly. So we already know you. We know what you spend. We know what you like to play. And so you will now in the future start to get you'll start to get those offers directly from Norwegian.
Okay.
Just like any casino.
You said you've generally got, was it 20 to 30 table games?
Correct.
What's your, it, I mean, I'm going to assume it's different on each ship, but have you got a broad sort of ratio of what you've got?
Yeah, I mean, it's the usual suspects. It's blackjack, it's baccarat, it's roulette, it's dice, ultimate Texas Hold'em, three-card poker, Pai Gow poker, Texas Hold'em. Yeah, it really covers the whole range. Yeah,
is one of those more numerous than others? I mean, I'm going to assume blackjack's
of course
popular and roulette.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
What variety of roulette, you know?
Double zero.
Okay.
Double zero. Yeah.
Do you know, I've recounted this story many times on this podcast, I think, but I was talking to a UK operator, just chatting on the phone, and he just said, "You'll never believe the conversation I just had." I'm like, "What?" And he said, "Well, I've just had some customers corner me and say that they think we're ripping them off because we've only got single zero roulette. And they want the double zero, but they've heard of a triple zero roulette and they want that one." He said, "Yeah. I've tried to explain it to them, but they're not having it."
Interesting. Yes. And you know, I, in my opinion, again, it's my opinion only, not the opinion of the company, but I think that, you know, when it comes to triple zero roulette, if I'm a land-based casino and I already have four roulette games on my gaming floor and my guests have other casinos and options, let's say the Las Vegas Strip as an example. For us, you gotta imagine the average cruise length is 7 days. So we have 7 days to capture your play. Yes, we're only on deck eight. So we need to make sure that we have games, slot titles, for example, that are familiar to our guests that typically would play in land-based or are walking in the casino just to have a flutter. They maybe never in their hometown ever go to a casino. But you know what? Tonight we're going to the show and we're going to have a great dinner. And you know what? Let's go and put $50 on a roulette game. We know nothing about roulette. I know there's black, there's red. That's easy. I'll talk to other people at the game. It's social. Yeah, so we are... Hence why we also don't have single zero. Yes, we have ships that sail in Europe and they sail year round. However, I would say, again, my opinion, our bread and butter is still the guests from North America. Not just casino. I'm talking about the people who book cruises are coming from the United States, really.
I know that one of the big growth areas for the cruise industry in the last sort of 20 years is sort of very themed cruises, like where you have like a particular band who play on the cruise and that kind of thing. Is that something you guys do?
We do, You know, it's not uncommon for companies to charter out our ships for, it could be a band, bands. It could be an LGBTQ cruise. I met some people at a casino event that I gave them a cruise certificate, and they had nothing but accolades. They had sailed with Norwegian before, but they said the last cruise we went on, it was chartered out half of the ship to furries. Well, again, maybe it's my vintage, but I had no idea what a furry was. And then this gentleman proceeded to show me on his mobile device.
I was going to say, tell me you didn't Google it.
Yeah, I didn't, but he certainly did. And he said, I had no issue with it until I was in the elevator with my little kids and this furry put his arm around, you know, one of my children. And I said, well, I said, I'm sorry to hear about that. I said, but, you know, he was annoyed because Norwegian didn't tell him that the ship was chartered out, half chartered out to furries. And I'm not, again, I'm not being specific about them, but that's something that comes to mind. And it's going back to your question. Yeah, it's not unusual for us to have a charter. But to take a full ship, it's a big undertaking, and you got to make sure you're selling the cruise fares, and you're gonna fill it up when you make the commitment, right?
Gotcha. So those events, they're not organized by the cruise company. The ship's chartered, so it's great for you guys because you get your fares regardless.
Yep.
Kind of everybody wins.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
Okay. I've been trying to think for years what band I would go on a cruise for, and I'm just not sure.
I think we had Kiss.
I definitely would not go on a Kiss cruise. I'm going to be honest with you.
I don't know. You know, we also host a very, very large Casinos at Sea poker tournament annually. And I think last year, if I'm not mistaken, it was the $1 million takeover. And essentially the whole ship is poker players, slot players. And so in public areas, let's say a dining room, pardon me, that you would normally have dining tables, was all kitted out with Hold'em poker tables as well, right down to you know, the last table. And that's a charter, but that's hosted by casino. Yeah.
That's amazing.
And we fill it. Definitely.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. We do golf tournament cruises. Again, it wouldn't be the whole ship, but because we cruise from New York, from Manhattan to Bermuda year round. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, we're the only cruise line that does that. And when ships go to Bermuda, not just ours, but our competitors as well, they stay in Bermuda for 3 days. So you use the ship like a floating hotel, a floating resort. That way you and your missus, you could go and enjoy, you know, the beaches. You can go and play a round of golf. And we do a golf tournament every year for casino. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. So the players are not just coming on the cruise from Manhattan over to Bermuda. They're enjoying our casino, everything that we have to offer, enjoying our amazing ship and product. And then they're also in Bermuda, and we host a golf tournament for them. And it's something I've been wanting to do for a number of years, but I keep being told, you can't go.
But you're the director of casino business development. You should be teeing off first.
Yeah, I'll let you and my VP discuss that one.
Give me their email.
It's all good. I get enough golf in you annually, so but it's one of those on my wish list, if you will.
So another reason Fintan should be here, he's just taken up golf.
Just?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
I haven't. I've got a bit of a theory about golf. I don't know whether I should share it here.
Fire away.
Well, no, I have a feeling that golf and sports like it, so like bowls, you know, like crown green bowls, lawn yes. bowls, are among the keys to a long life. But unfortunately, the people that I know that have learned that are among the most evil bastards I've ever met, and they appear to be immortal. But they take their clubs out, they go in for a round or two a week, having a stroll, doing some exercise, having a chat with friends, getting their muscles working in a dynamic way. You know what I mean? There's the outside in the fresh air. There's so many pluses to it.
Massive, massive benefits. You know, I see that with some older men and women on golf courses, and exactly as you described, they're out there. And you know what's interesting is those people that have been playing the game for such a long time, they're just steady eddies. I mean, that fella may not hit the ball the farthest, but every bloody time it's straight down the middle and it's consistently the same. And the swing is smooth and steady. And yeah, there's something to be said for that. And I see that with men and women at courses all the time. Yep.
But I've also always said about golf, it's a little bit like running in that you could play one hole every day for the rest of your life and you'll never actually play the same. You're not actually playing the same hole twice because there are so many, such an almost infinite number of variables within yourself, within the environment. It's crazy. How did you say that about running? You never actually do the same run twice, ever.
And it's true. And until you've played the game of golf and you get into it, you can't really appreciate what the pros do.
Oh, God. And, same and as they, snooker.
The level they're on is just...
Have you played snooker, Brad?
I have played billiards. I'm not very well, but again, I've played with people that are exceptional or witnessed it. And again, you know, you just tip your hat and go, wow, okay.
That's it.
Bloody impressive.
It's probably the same for like Formula One, you know what I mean? It's wasted on me, but I'm sure it's really, really difficult. But I just don't appreciate that because I'm not driving at 200 miles an hour. Generally I've tried, but my Mini just won't do it. And I did play snooker once and left that table with an incredible respect for the pros.
Sure.
And you see that because it's not just hitting the ball in the pocket, it's placing the ball after that exactly where you want it.
Totally.
And the table is massive.
Yeah.
It's like, holy crap, how do they do this? Yeah. But yes, with golf, my ex-wife was into golf.
Oh,
and so we'd go do a bit of pitch and putt or whatever, you know. And she was really, she was quite physically strong and, you know, she could really drive. And yeah, just, you know, picking up tips from her and then watching a professional tournament, you're just like, oh, this is not the same sport.
Yeah.
Because that consistency you talked about in those people, that consistency with power and with sort of creativity, I suppose, and imagination, the things that separate the pros in any field from the rest of us.
For sure.
They're breathing different air.
You know, I really got into it living in Las Vegas. Obviously, you know, 363 days of sunshine, had a great colleague and CEO that I worked with, Roger Hawkins, and Roger enjoyed the game as well. And there was a course that we would play at called Rio Seco. And Tiger Woods back in the day had a coach named Butch Harmon, and Butch Harmon has a golf school at Rio Seco. And Tiger at that time, whether it's changed or not, but he had the course record, and I think it was like a 62 or something like that. And until you have played that course over and over and over and over and over again, and this was a guy playing, in this case, Tiger Woods from the tips, and he was shooting a 62, that's when you go, holy moly, like, really? Really? You know? And I got an 89, and I'm like, yes, thank you. You know, I broke 100. I'm delighted.
Back to cruise lines just for a minute, because we're going to come on to Canadians in a second. What, I mean, cruise lines were obviously, very obviously, massively hit by COVID. And, you know, we've seen historical, you know, you might get a super unfortunate outbreak of a disease on a boat. And, and of course, it makes headlines because, but people forget, it makes headlines because it's unusual. You know what I mean? This is why we don't read newspaper reports of lots of car accidents, but we do read newspaper reports about plane crashes.
Sure.
Having had the, I mean, where are we now? 2026, and things are largely recovered or have evolved in most industry, in most hospitality industries. Is there any sort of evolution in the future of cruise ships, or is it just like everything's actually pretty good?
So, let's say in the case of something like Legionnaire's disease, which, as I understand, is gastrointestinal, the reason why it hits the headlines is because we follow the guidelines of this CDC in the United States. The CDC is the same Center for Disease Control, is the same organization that shut down the cruise line business in March of 2020, and we came to a grinding halt. And as an industry, we didn't sail for over 560 days, if I'm not mistaken. Legionnaire's disease and things of similar happen in hospitals, nursing homes, etc., all the time, but it's not reported because it's not required. So when you think back to COVID, to the pandemic, the cruise line industry was essentially the poster child for COVID-19. Because there was people on cruise ships, they were starting to get sick, ships were stuck, they had to expatriate the guests and then moreover the crew members to their respective countries. So yeah, so we were the poster child, if you will, of COVID, but I will tell you that everything is squeaky clean on a cruise ship. We have no choice. We have to be because all it takes is one person to have an ailment, and you know how that spreads, especially if it's gastrointestinal. You have children, you know what that's like. You know, they bring it home from school like that. So, the industry as a whole, and in this case, Norwegian, you know, people called it revenge travel, as you know, coming out of the pandemic, or certainly that was what they called it in Canada. You know, the business, thank goodness, is booming. People are not, they're not stopping from going on cruises and traveling overall. And moreover, cruising is very, very good value. You know, it's essentially all inclusive. And once you unpack your bags, and then you're traveling to a different destination, whether it's a Caribbean cruise and you're going to an island every day or every other day, or you're in Europe on a 9-day cruise and 7 out of 9 days you're in a different port, and you're getting off the ship and you're going to wineries and galleries and walking the streets and of Lisbon and enjoying all that life has to offer. And then you get to come back to your ship, which is safe and it's beautiful and it's clean, and your stateroom is all made up and it's stunning from our incredible crew members that do that every day. You have your shower, you change for the evening, you have a wonderful meal, you go some entertainment, the ship sails off, the casino opens, you have a punt, and you get up and you do it all again the next day.
Okay, I'm sold. I've never been on a cruise, but I would consider it. I have some neighbors and they love cruises. This is not going to surprise you. They are older. Because I know certainly in the UK, cruises have a reputation as being something older people really love. I find that really interesting, though, because, like, you're dead right. The all-inclusive sort of aspect of it, like all-inclusive holidays, everybody understands what that means.
Yep.
You know, everybody gets that. And that thing where you're not stuck in the arse end of nowhere or whatever, you're going to different places all the time. Plus, the place that you're in is probably nicer than most hotels you've been in your life. I'm speaking for myself here. I did stay in the Mandarin Oriental once in Macau, though.
Oh, lovely. Oh, nice. It's hard to go back from that.
I never wanted to leave.
Yeah, no kidding.
God, yeah, I would have worked there. I would have worked there just to be able to stay there for longer. benefits. That sort of it's not really reputation, but is that fair, do you think, that cruises have that? Maybe it's just a European thing. Maybe it's a totally different attitude in North America. Is it a wider age range in North America? Does Europe see an older cruiser?
So let's take England, the UK out of it for a moment. I can tell you that Norwegian, our demographic is between 30 and 50 years old. Everything below, everything above. We have ships with multi-level go-kart tracks. Well, most 80-plus-year-old people are not going on that go-kart. But again, I, who am I to say, or to judge for that matter? So we kind of tick all the boxes. Now, as you get into the other brands that I mentioned that we have, Oceania, Regent, those are certainly people of an older vintage, again, I use the word, or demographic, because they're very established, and those are expensive cruises. So you're probably maybe already retired, and you know, we do world cruises on some of those ships that sell out in one day, and the cost is, it's extraordinary. But when you amateurize it over the number of days and the number of continents and what you're doing in a 6-month period, it's all relative, John, right? So again, we tick all the boxes. And then when it comes to the UK, I think that mindset is changing as well, because you can go back to some of the older known brands, not to be mentioned on this podcast, that were from a certain establishment in the UK, and people were a little bit older, and they enjoyed crossing the Atlantic for 6 days and just sitting on a lounger with a woolly blanket and a book in hand. Some people still do that, and there's nothing wrong with that. We have many transatlantic crossings, but it really has changed a lot. It's changed a lot.
Well, that's what I want to do, though. I want to sit, look at the sea. I want a blanket across my lap, and I want to read a book.
Beauty. Nothing wrong with that.
Any suggestions of a route that might suit me?
Yeah, like you could do a Southampton to Miami. You could do
the fjords
to New York. Well, yeah, but now you're going north. Now you're going to a different. But if you want to do that, yes, you could go to the fjords, of course.
I'm English. I'm okay with being cold.
There you go.
We love that shit.
You could go out of Athens and do the Greek islands, Turkey and Egypt.
Do you know, I didn't get a passport till I was 26, I think.
Oh.
And I've totally made up for it now. But the first place I went was Egypt. I was working for QVC, the shopping channel.
Sure.
And and they suggested I might like a holiday. So that's really bad when your client's like, take a week off. But it was very fair. They were right. And I went with my flatmate, who's an old school friend, and we went to Egypt for a week. And it was like, well, it was like being in a foreign country, frankly, Brad. I was lucky I managed to find a KFC.
There you go. I remember KFC and Wimpy's in Cairo.
We weren't in Cairo. We were on the Red Sea coast.
Oh, lovely. Like Sharm?
Further south, Hagada.
Okay. Very nice. Good
scuba. It was lovely. But you know, one of the main reasons it was lovely, I feel, was that there were hardly any English people there. We fully deserve our reputation.
No Brits abroad, eh? No Brits abroad on that.
Seriously.
A lot of Germans?
Germans and Italians, yeah, loads. Absolutely loads.
Excellent.
And when they found out that me and my friend were British, it was like, oh, yeah. Thanks. I mean, it's probably fair, but...
I don't understand that hand gesture, John. I have no idea what that is.
Well, for anybody who is listening or who is watching in black and white, that wasn't me. So, Brad, have you got a favorite Canadian?
John Candy, the late John Candy, for sure.
Wow. Great shout. Great shout. I haven't watched the documentary yet, but I'm looking forward to it. I like
me. You know what? Nor have I. I've seen snippets of it, loads of interviews.
Yeah.
I must watch it. But I grew up with SCTV, with Eugene Levy, Andrea Martin, of course, the late Catherine O'Hara, who just recently passed away. But John Candy, you know, grew up with him on SCTV, which was Second City Television. And his movies, you know, from Uncle Buck to Home Alone. I mean, you know.
I'm a huge John Hughes fan, so I'm coming at it from a slightly different perspective, but I'm a huge John Hughes fan.
Yeah. So he would be one of my, it's not Bryan Adams or, as of late, over the last few years since you asked, I used to think that Jim Carrey was off his rocker, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I have a much different respect for Jim Carrey now, and he's a Canadian also, of course. He's all right. He's all right.
He definitely is. I think he's a very smart man.
Phenomenal actor. But I just think overall, he's a good guy.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
He's a good guy.
I totally agree.
There's too many to list. You know, we have a lot. We have a lot.
Do you keep all the best ones to yourself?
Well.
Are they allowed out of Canada?
Yeah, Keanu Reeves. The late Leonard Cohen.
Sticky Henderson. She might be my favorite Canadian.
Sticky Henderson. The band Rush. I mean, come on. Yeah.
Rush feels like a bit of a reach. I'd have accepted. Glass Tiger.
Progressive rock. I'm not a Rush fan today as I sit here, but I respect growing up. That Rush was very, even though that wasn't my vibe, it wasn't my jam, But again, as you get older in life, I realize what an unbelievable band they are. And their late drummer, Neil Peart, probably rated, and you can look this up after this podcast, without a doubt, considered the godfather of drumming, like the GOAT. The GOAT. The okay. GOAT. All right?
Okay. I'm just going to do some
Bonham,
Googling.
No, not taking away from John Bonham. You know, I was always a Zeppelin fan, but Rush. Just watch him do a solo, and you'll be absolutely mystified if you appreciate drumming.
Okay. Look, I've just Googled it, and that's obviously definitive. And I've Googled greatest drummers of all time in order, right? Now, generally, you're going to have jazz drummers featuring very prominently in that list. Of course. I should have probably done rock drummers. Should have done greatest rock drummers of all time.
Sure.
But let's look at what Rolling Stone said.
Go on. Do tell. Now I'm intrigued.
Wow. Ooh. Oh man, there's a lot to get through here. But I'm just gonna see if I can skip.
What's the top five?
Forward to the end there. Well, you know, if my namesake isn't in it. Oh, top 10. 10 is Stuart Copeland.
Mm-hmm. The Police, yeah.
9 is Al Jackson Jr. That's not unfair. Because it was the Stax Records in-house guy, and some of the records he's on were just
Stax. Yep.
Mitch Mitchell was Hendrix's drummer. Mm-hmm. Gene Krupa, who was a drummer that Neil Peart was a big fan of. Neil okay. Peart says he was the first rock drummer in many ways.
Okay.
Clyde Stubblefield and John Jabo Starks. That's kind of fair. They performed with James Brown.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah, they could play. Hal Blaine is number 5. Oh, yeah, that's fair. Played the drums on Be My Baby. What sound that is. Number 4, Neil Peart.
Number 4?
Yeah, and okay. He's from Birmingham.
All right. Number 4 of all time. He's from Birmingham? He's a Brummie? Really?
Yeah.
Okay. But he grew up in Toronto.
Almost certainly.
He's founded, but okay.
Oh, no, hang on. No, it does say he's from Birmingham. It said he was very Keith Moon-like when he auditioned.
Hmm.
Number 3, Ginger Baker.
Hmm.
Well, this is interesting. Number 2, Keith Moon.
The Who.
So who's going to be number 1? I'm going to stick my neck out here.
John Bonham.
I don't think it's going to be John Bonham. I think it's going to be Bill Bruford, and I'm going to feel great familial pride. Oh, yeah, it's John Bonham.
There you go. And I wasn't Googling it because I actually thought Neil Peart would be up, but... Okay, so he's number 4. All right.
Top 5 is, there is no shame in top 5.
No, sir.
No. Is there a great Canadian movie?
A great Canadian movie?
Something that's more Canadianer than anything else. Like, all movies have their own unique flavor. Was Canadian Bacon a Canadian film? Because it's a very Canadian film.
It was. Oh, my gosh. Oh, you stumped me. Isn't that terrible?
Call yourself a Canadian.
I think, what was the movie with Bob and Doug McKenzie? That was called, was that Canadian Bacon? Do you mind if I just have a nosy here on my phone?
Go for it. Go for it.
Isn't that terrible? I mean, I can name bands. I can name actors, actresses.
We're not judging you.
Best Canadian films.
Uh, in order.
Popular top 10 Canadian films of all time. Here we go. Ah, Jesus of Montreal. I remember that film. Denis Arcand. But that's 1989.
Can you not count like Denis Villeneuve?
David Cronenberg, Dead Ringers.
Wow. We love Cronenberg. We love Cronenberg.
That's the top.
Actually, I brought up Cronenberg in the last episode of this very podcast.
Did you?
I was trying to explain to somebody the movie Naked Lunch. It's not an easy film to explain.
No, it isn't.
But it's not an easy film to watch.
The Apprenticeship of Duddy Kravitz.
Wow.
We read that book in school.
The movie had, what's the name in it? Richard Dreyfuss, didn't it?
That's right. It did have Richard Dreyfuss. Great actor.
Yeah, terrific, but apparently a really grumpy bastard.
Why does that not surprise me?
He seems so cheerful in all of his films. Any other Canadian things I need to do? Do you have a favorite Canadian mountain?
Well, of course, I love the Rockies, the Cascade Mountains, the Persil Mountain Range. You know, I'm very fortunate. Where I reside, we're around wonderful mountains, but I don't have a specific. No, I don't. No, there's too many.
My favorite is probably Mount Terry Fox. Couldn't tell you where it is. I just like it because it's Terry.
I don't know if there is a Mount Terry Fox, is there?
Oh, there is. There really is. I would not lead you down the garden path there.
So they named it Mount Terry Mount. Oh, it is. Peak in British Columbia, and it's 2,645 meters, so near Valmont. Okay, yeah, that's a bit of a ways from where I am. It's the Rocky Mountains. Mount Terry Fox Provincial Park, located near Valmont, BC. I never even knew that.
Hey, we're here to educate.
Well, thank you for sharing that, John. That's so
cool.
It's
my pleasure. It's absolutely my pleasure. Brad Broderick, thank you for coming on and talking to us about cruises and stuff, because it's honestly, it feels like a sort of almost a hidden world, like a part of the industry that we all get the idea. We know that casinos exist on cruise ships, but there's so much more to it than that, like existing within the greater economy and the software that drives that.
Yeah.
So I found out about the software that drives it because I interviewed Joanne Everson many years ago of Everson Software. And they used to do the cruise ship software.
One thing, John, in closing, also you said, I think you said you had neighbors that love cruising. Is that right?
Yeah, they're mad for it. Yeah.
So, and you know, I do enough of these casino events that, you know, we put the certificates in the players' hands. It's interesting about cruising, and I can't really liken it to anything else in the sense that either you love it or you loathe it. There's nothing in the middle. You know, I don't meet people that say, oh, you know what, it's okay. Well, you know what, if I'm going to spend money on a vacation, I don't want it to just be okay. But I would tell you, excuse me, that 80 or not, I don't know what the exact percentage is, but so I don't want to quote it, but the number of repeat cruisers, it's extraordinary. It's extraordinary. And I do enough of these events that people say, my God, we love Norwegian. These are the things we love about it. Or we've been on 50 cruises and they're happy to show me their badge that they have, just like a Boy Scout or a Brownie would get, and talk about it and share their experiences. So I guess where I'm going is I've never really found anything in the middle. Either people say, you know what, I'm not interested, I don't like cruising, or they say, I absolutely love it. Wow, I'm so happy that I got this reward from this casino and we can't wait to go on a cruise. Yeah. So there you go, man.
Okay. No, I am genuinely immensely curious about it. Not least because the variety of destinations kind of blows my mind a little bit.
For sure. For sure. It's been a pleasure, John. I'm glad I could finally make your acquaintance.
Let's not leave it so long next time.
Absolutely, man.
If you've enjoyed this episode of the Gambling Files podcast, please find us on LinkedIn. Give us a big, juicy, succulent like. That nearly went wrong. You can find us under the name The Gambling Files Podcast. You find us on Twitter under The Gambling Files. I think the handle is just at Gambling Files. You can connect to myself, John Bruford, or Fintan Costello, also on LinkedIn. We're also both on Twitter. And you can find all of our previous episodes at www.thegamblingfiles.com. If you enjoyed it, please share, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your colleagues, and we'll see you next time.